So, Doug, I'm going to throw a phrase out there, and you tell me if when you hear it, that facial tick clicks in. Zoom press conference. I bet you're going to miss those day in and day out.
If there's two things in my life I wish I invested in, magnetic wands and Zoom. I'd be a billionaire and wouldn't have to work.
I mean, I know the folks on the Jays beat are going through it now, and of course, people on the Maple Leafs beat, it's been an entire regular season. The playoffs are beginning, but we've witnessed it watching Sportsnet Central or whatever clips of these different things. From somebody who has done this as long and as well as you have, can you encapsulate the experience of covering the beat of a professional team in a pandemic? What has it been like?
It's virtually impossible because covering a beat, like you guys know, is developing relationships in one-on-one conversations, and you can't have them. I haven't physically seen anybody involved with the Raptors since March 9th, 2020. So you can't walk up to a guy and get him aside and have a chat that might yield a story for the next day or might yield a story for a week from now. You can't do that. And it's made the job really, really hard. Every story that everybody writes is basically the same because you have all access to the same information.
What does your gut tell you about Masai though? Like I know it's everyone's kind of everyone's guessing. It's like, well, what's Mr. Tannenbaum going to do? You know, what's the ownership thinking? What's Masai thinking? No one can get in his head, but I feel like if you had to guess at this point, just with not announcing it, and then all of a sudden we're not even sure which story's right. Like, oh, they were going to talk at the end of the season. I had not heard that until a couple weeks ago, right? And then all of a sudden it was, yeah, once the season's done, then we're going to sit down and talk. How are you making, you know, of all the information that you have gotten, what's your gut telling you today? Because it's probably different than it was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, my gut today says he'll be back. Maybe not on a 5-year contract, maybe on 3, maybe on a series of 1-year rollovers, but I think he'll be back. I don't know that. I think in a twisted kind of bizarre way, a bad season will bring him back because I think he would like to leave. I think he would like to leave on a good note, not on the worst note of his tenure in Toronto. So I think that's probably a little bit of a factor, but I've always thought that eventually he would come back because, one, I don't see the next challenge for him out there. I think the next challenge for him out there, if he wants to stay in basketball, and that's not even a given, would be an expansion team, which is going to come on in probably 2, maybe 3 years. So maybe that's something that he's got on his eye on in the long term. But I think the way they're at the season ended and the way the process is set up to some kind of rebuild or just sort of tweak what he put in place, I think that challenge is going to be very intriguing.
With Doug Smith of the Toronto Star on Leadoff Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So they're in the lottery. We know that. They missed the playoffs. They will have a relatively high draft pick. They have a core of returning pieces on long-term and big money contracts around which to build. If you were to identify 2, maybe 3 needs and prioritize those needs, 1, 2, 3, Doug, for this offseason, what would they be?
I think they need a starting 2, a backup 3, and a big 7-footer. I think those are right there. And that's regardless of what happens with Kyle Lowry. I think a stud shooting guard, backcourt guy is important. I don't think there's anybody on this team that backs up OG Anunoby to the level that you want. And while I'm quite happy with Kem Birch and maybe Freddie Gillespie, they're still 6'9". And I think you need to be a little bit bigger up there. So those would be the needs that I see today. Now, whether they do it through the draft or whether they trade some of their assets or how they go about accomplishing it, I think those are the 3 things right now that they got to fill.
What do you think happens with Johnson, Bembry, and Baines? Do any of them come back
next year? I can't see it. I think Bembry's kind of intriguing, but I'm still not entirely sure what position he plays. I think Johnson is he's only 24 years old. He's got some basketball left in him, but his offensive liabilities are too big to make up for his defensive skills. Baines at $7 million or whatever his option year is next year is just like superfluous. He can't play the way this team needs him to play. And it was an experiment that went awry, and we knew it pretty quickly. But I don't blame him, because someone offers you a 2-year deal with an option on the second year, you take it. But it's impossible for me to see a way for him to come back.
If you had to summarize the Raptors' season in one word, what would it be?
Well, Nick used tumultuous, so I can't use that. I would say I would probably go with inconsistent, because it wasn't just the pandemic. They lost a lot of games with full roster that they shouldn't have lost. They got beat at home by Minnesota, was the worst team in the NBA. They got beat at home by Sacramento, which was a very bad team. They spat up an Atlanta game when they were up 15 with 5 minutes to go. They no-showed in Atlanta after winning in Brooklyn. Those were with full rosters. So the pandemic and the relocation are absolutely huge factors. But they gave away a lot of games. And that's basically on the team as opposed to on the circumstances.
Yeah, and Pascal, for example, had the ball in his hand and missed some buzzer beaters, and that's luck of the draw sometimes.
Yeah, Kyle Lowry fouled a guy shooting a double pump 3-pointer with 4 seconds to go in a game in Golden State. He probably hasn't committed that foul once in his life,
and never will again.
Cost him a game. Yeah. Exactly, and it cost him a game.
Were you surprised, or were you led ever to question, Doug, in your own mind, the lack of congruence, or at least it seemed, between the decision not to trade Kyle Lowry at the deadline and then the usage of Lowry and some others down the stretch? I mean, they clearly made the decision not to field the best lineup night in and night out as they were still in it. I mean, they were a game or two behind that 10th and final play-in spot, and they would rest guys here and there. They even got fined once for circumventing the injury rules, $25,000, I think it was. Like, was there incongruence there, or did it all make sense to you?
It was the handling of Lowry was a little weird to me. Not that they didn't trade him. I never thought they were going to trade him, because if you're going to deal him, you want to expand the market, and the market expands by 10 times around the draft and free agency. So that wasn't a big deal that he didn't get traded to Philly, Miami, or the Lakers, because there just wasn't a fit that I saw. Not using him as often as they did down the stretch in the second half was a little bit confusing. You could understand the logic behind it to let the other guys play. And, Lowry's toe was bothering him a little bit right after the trade deadline. But, that handling was, they're going to have to answer for it. And they're going to say, we needed to see the kids. We needed to find out what we had and put them in positions to learn how we have to develop them. You can argue that till the cows come home, and you won't know for 2 years probably. But, there was a time in the, late April time where I thought, they should run him out there because there's still some juice left in this team. And they didn't. And that's on them, and that's a decision. It's a decision that they made it 8 years ago or 10 years ago, no one would have thought a thing about. But they've been so good for so long that people thought, well, they just don't do this. Well, guess what? For the first 15 years of the franchise, they did it almost every year. They just didn't have, it wasn't the same level, and there wasn't the same history of success that you were stopping.
With Doug Smith on Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Last one for you. Chris Bosh is a basketball Hall of Famer. And there was a long period of time where he was this franchise, the Raptors franchise. He was this franchise's best player. He was the third best player of the big three in Miami with LeBron and D-Wade. And there's no insult in saying that. And what we do know, Doug, is that we are, for whatever reason, possessive about the halls of fames of the sports that we watch. And we yell at each other and we debate these things. Is Chris Bosh, in your mind, a basketball Hall of Famer slam dunk?
Absolutely. It has been for 3 or 4 years. An 11-time All-Star, a second-team All-NBA, when he played in Toronto, as a matter of fact, two-time NBA champion, an Olympic champion, bronze medal in a world championship, 17,700 points, 76 or 7,700 rebounds, 11-time All-Star, as I said, in 13 years. No matter what you think of the level it takes to get into Hall of Fame, he's a Hall of Famer. And I don't think there's – I'm surprised he didn't get in his first year of eligibility last year.